That's how we're going to start.
Yeah, that's how we're going to start. Well, that was a good Sunday, hey, wasn't it?
Well, we're rolling right now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, good. All right.
That was a really good Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, man, that Sunday was great. Fuck, man. But I feel tired as fuck after that weekend, man.
I feel tired.
Mate, I went literally from having a Saturday night where I was painted like an Oscar trophy, and then like all night doing jobs, and then that Sunday morning literally woke up and came straight to you, and then we went to watch the fights.
Watch the fights at the pub, and then afterwards we did our own podcast collaboration with the For a Laugh podcast, which was really fun. We'll talk about that in a sec, but the main thing we've got to get out of the way, UFC 250 tour. What a card, dude. That was so cool.
Do you feel like that was a short card though? I felt like that card went by really, really quickly.
I felt like it went by really quickly, but I think it was just because we had some of them really didn't go to decision and things like that.
Yeah, well, quite a lot of them didn't go really to decision. Yeah. Most of the main card were only two of them of the five fights. Only two of them were actually, what is it, decision?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the main event first.
Yeah.
Steve, well, actually, going into this, before we were watching the fight, you asked me, like, who do you reckon is going to win this trilogy? And I said, you know, I'm betting on Stipe. You were betting on Cormier.
Yeah, well, the reason why is because the fact that Cormier is the older gentleman, you know, and he, if he won, I reckon it'll be a great place for him to retire.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he's in his 40s now, like, very, very few fighters have made it to their 40s, don't you? Do you agree?
A lot of the time, yeah. I think the only real ones up there is maybe the Alexei Oleinik and
Randy Couture made it to his 40s, you know.
And Yoel Romero.
Yeah.
I think there's a special subset of these. He looked brilliant, I'll be honest.
Yeah,
like, it was such a competitive fight. A lot of people had, going into the fifth, it was 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like one of those rounds was very close and it could have leaned into Stipe maybe.
Yeah, the main advantage that Stipe had going on was that the fact that he knocked Daniel Cormier down.
Mm.
And then there was a moment where...
The second round,
yeah.
Last 10 seconds or something. Yeah.
And he literally held on to the end of that second round.
Oh, he really did.
And Daniel was stumbling back to his corner.
Yeah, he didn't walk properly back to his corner.
Not even that, but he suffered that nasty eye poke. Well, they both did.
Stipe got poked in the eye,
mm-hmm.
and then Daniel got poked in the eye from Stipe. But the one by Stipe to Daniel was so much more like horrific.
Oh,
like we found out afterwards, he's actually got a scratch on his cornea or something like that.
Yeah, so he tore one of the muscles in his eye.
Right.
And basically that's why at the end of the fight, one of the eyelids was literally hanging over.
Yeah.
And I believe that reason why it's just like a mechanism to like cover it, because
in the interview, he literally said, I can't see.
Yeah.
It's just black. I can't see.
Yeah. Both of them have a history of eye pokes.
Duran, I'm expecting Michael Bisping just chiming in next time DC complains about eye pokes. He's like, hey, I did it for 12 fights. I did it for 12 fights. What are you complaining about?
And it just pops out his eye. He's like, do you want one of these, mate?
He pops out his eye and he's like, here you go, DC.
Yeah.
No, but that was such a sick fight. It was so competitive. Like, you know, there was times where Stipe was a bit, well, I think it was a bit wobbly in the first round. Cormier gets dropped in the second. You know, I was going for Stipe just because I knew he could put on the pace. I thought he looked brilliant beforehand. You know, he was only a couple pounds lighter than Cormier, but he looked like lean and mean. He looked ready to go. Very impressive for someone like Cormier is 41, and I'm pretty sure Stipe is 37 or 38. Very impressive for people, for guys that are already out of their prime. And I'm glad Stipe is getting more recognition now, because now he really is the undisputed greatest of the heavyweights.
I believe he is the best heavyweight, period.
I think so. Actually, do you want to go through his resume?
Yeah, go on. I mean,
we were speaking about it yesterday, who would be considered the top five greats out there.
He's definitely number one right now. Well, it's just that Stipe's beaten everybody, you know what I mean? Who's left?
And a lot of time it wasn't by decision. A lot of it is by it was by KO. And anyone, I think any loss he's had, because he's had like three losses, two of his losses he's avenged and one of them he hasn't. But
the one that he hasn't avenged is Stephen Struve, who doesn't fight anymore, does he?
No, and that was 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was quite, 8 years ago is quite a long time for, you know, for a fighter. So I'm going to, I'll just pick apart and I'm going to leave out his other fights outside of the UFC.
Because
really, we only really care at this point about his fights in the UFC right now. So he started and he made his debut at UFC 136. He went into, he was on a three fight win streak until he lost until with Stephen Struve. Had a three fight winning streak again, beating Roy Nelson by decision, Gabriel Gonzaga by decision, Fabio Maldonado. I always remember that from Rampage, messing up his name. Afterwards, he was like, this guy's got Moxie, Fabio Mababo. and then he, strangely enough, on his three-fight win streak again, he lost to JDS. And that was by decision. And then he beat Mark Hunt, who's a K-1 champion, dynamite in his hands, by KO. He beat Andrei Arlovsky by KO. He was a champion at one point. Fabricio Verdum, KO by punches. Alistair Overeem, KO by punches. Who was a phenom in the earlier days before UFC. KO'd JDS, so he's instead of Junior, beat him by decision, and then Stipe came after quite a few fights after beating these guys, after like a four fight win streak, and actually beat Junior Dos Santos by punches. And then the big bad Francis Ngannou came out there, and everyone expected Francis to just run through him like a steam train. And it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because when we watched that fight, we saw that Stipe, he respected his Francis's power to the point that he was like, I'm going to wrestle him. And by wrestling him and acting smart, he was able to neutralize a lot of his power. And he managed to, you know, out-wrestle him that time, and he won by decision. And then we had Daniel Cormier, who after, you know, it wasn't that long after his fight with Francis Ngannou, he fought Daniel Cormier. And it looked like possibly, because it was so shortly after, that maybe going five rounds could have affected his chin. Because that punch in the clinch, although Cormier hit so much, so hard, especially at heavyweight with that extra weight on his hands, but it seemed like he just got him on the button and took him down. And I'm glad to see that, you know, Stipe then won against Daniel Cormier by knocking him out in the fourth, really using those liver shots. And then once he was really affected and Cormier started to drop to one knee, he really just laid it onto him and he beat him at that point. And then the fight yesterday, amazing competitive fight. Props to DC, props to Stipe. Stipe, you know, he really did well to get the decisive unanimous decision. You know, there's the resume that he has, you can't doubt that he's, even if you don't even like Stipe and things like that, he's got to be in your top two, top three. Personally, I think he's the best.
Well, personally, he is the best because, well, this dude has no fear. There was a time when Francis Ngannou, I would say still is, he was considered the boogeyman of the heavyweight division, you know what I mean? Because, yeah, he is the boogeyman because there was a feud between him, there was a lot of back and forth between him and John Jones.
Mm.
And if John Jones was going up to Francis Ngannou, he was like, dude, you got to pay me more if you want me to see me fight him. Mm. So, and everyone's like, nah, man, because I honestly believe that Francis Ngannou, who would have been able to beat John Jones, I honestly do.
Mm.
And, you know, but Stipe was like, fuck it, this guy ain't shit. And he made him look like a complete clown. Like, people forget, like, how powerful he is. Like, let me give you an example. When he fought Fabricio Werdum, he knocked him out while walking backwards.
Mm. He was off balance.
He was off balance. That, from a biomechanical and physiological perspective, is really, really hard to do.
But really difficult. The amount of power he must just have in his hands without even, I don't even know if one of his legs were touching the ground, to be honest. He was,
yeah.
He had no momentum or anything. He just hit him on the back foot.
I'll tell you a little story about that.
Right.
So one of the reasons why Stipe is so strong is because of the fact that he trains at the Strong Style MMA. That's the name of his gym, Strong Style MMA. Now, I can't remember the name of the head coach right off the bat, but the person who trained his coach was none other than Louis Simmons, the godfather of powerlifting.
Right.
Right. So Louis Simmons was basically the guy who runs Westside Barbell. Have you heard of that gym?
I have heard of that gym, yeah.
So he's like this crazy old motherfucker who's been a powerlifter like since the 70s, I believe. So he's been powerlifting and training athletes for a very, very long time. He even wrote books about powerlifting and he even educated so many coaches. And then one of his students who he trained in powerlifting was Stipe's coach. And then a lot of the things that he taught, he utilized with Stipe. His strength is unbelievable. Unbelievable for a man of his age and his size as well. Because when you think powerlifters, you think guys with big guts and such thick stomach muscles. Mm. Like if you look at Stipe like mimics a fair amount of their strength. And like coming into that fight physically, he looked like he was at his best. At for 37, he looked phenomenal.
I thought he looked his best. Yeah. I thought it was the best he looked physically. He looked a bit lean. I think it was the leanest he's ever came in.
Oh, yeah.
And I even thought he even put on a little bit of mass, especially in his legs and things like that. I thought he looked really good.
Yeah. And what was the other thing I wanted to know, point out there is I honestly believe next for Stipe, he should do a rematch with Francis Ngannou because right now no one wants to touch Francis.
Well, I was going to say that after the fight yesterday, Dana actually said Ngannou is next. And we saw that Francis Ngannou actually, he messaged Stipe on Twitter. He went and said, well done, champ. You know, I'll see you soon. He went hashtag Ngannou versus Stipe 2.
Yeah.
So he's ready for this rematch.
Yeah, well, because Ngannou's on a fucking warpath, man. Yeah. Like, he knocked out Rosenstrike. Who else is... He's knocked down a few people now. He's knocked out Rosenstrike. He knocked out Dos Santos. Mm. He knocked out...
Cain Velasquez.
What was the name of that Portuguese guy who we fought?
Portuguese?
Yeah, I remember it. I can't remember. Francis.
The last one he fought was Rosenstrike.
There was one more that he absolutely dominated, and it was like such a scary knockout. Well, it's just because he's got those wild swings. Right, and you know why he's like so big and strong is because he's only been training MMA for a few years.
He originally went in to try and do boxing.
Yeah.
Because he knew that's where the money was boxing.
Yeah. And basically he got a lot of his mass just from working hard, labor in the sand mines. Mm. Now, just looking at stats and record. Okay, I was thinking about... Oh, Blades. That was the other one. Yeah, Blades.
He beat him twice.
Yeah.
He beat Curtis twice.
Yeah. And so so there was a time when he lost to Stipe and then he fought Derek Lewis. Now, Derek Lewis basically was one of the most boring fights.
Everyone wasn't expecting it as
well. Yeah. Everyone was expecting a massive scrap, but it wasn't.
Because they're two of the biggest power punchers. And the thing was, they respected each other's power so much that it was mainly fakes moving in and out. And a lot of their punches weren't connecting and things like that. They were too respectful of each other's power, not scared, because I very much doubt Derek Lewis or Francis Ngannou has a single cell in their body where they're actually afraid. But they were respectful of each other's power, knowing that I've got a shit ton of power, he's got a shit ton of power, and they both knew that. And they were too respectful of each other's power to actually engage in an absolute war, because they knew that any of those punches could have knocked each other out. Clean.
Do you reckon they'll ever get a rematch?
I see it happening because Derek won his last fight, didn't he?
Mm.
And I would like to see Ngannou versus Stipe next. But there's someone else who's trying to jump the line a little bit, and that would be John Jones. Now, he put out on Twitter, he went and said, I think he was congratulating Stipe and that, but he was saying...
He always makes it about himself, you
know? He does. But you know, when any of these fighters, these big fighters, and they want a big fight, they have to keep themselves relevant. And he was saying, you know, when I'm looking at these guys, these heavyweights don't look that big. So, and actually, there was something, because I was doing a little bit of research into it, and I was looking into John Jones's camp, and he has a coach who I believe does, you know, his nutrition and his workouts and that, and he actually has his own Instagram with a lesser following, things like that, because I don't think they know about him that much. But he actually put in the bio at the very bottom of the description, he said, we're just working on putting a lot of bulking up Jones on his journey to heavyweight. So basically he's teasing, or confirming at least, that Jones wants to go to heavyweight. Now, Jones has always said he wants to go to heavyweight at some point.
Who do you think will be a good fight for him to start with?
I think he wants to skip the queue. I think he wants to go straight to Stipe. It's not, you know, let's be real, Jones is like, aside of, if we don't bring drugs or anything into the situation, he is the light heavyweight goat, right?
Yes, yes.
So he's obviously got the caliber of skill and strength, because he is a strong dude, but so is Stipe. And I know that, you know, Jones obviously cuts to 205, but Stipe cuts to, I think, 238 or something, 240, something like that. There's a big difference in size, and I think it would be such an amazing fight. I really think this would be a huge fight, John Jones with Stipe Miocic. The only thing is, in the way, is two things. It's not the only thing. The two things are, Francis is in the way, because Francis is on a 4-5 win streak, and everyone really wants to see Francis Ngannou versus Stipe Miocic. And the other thing that's in the way is the thing for John Jones, which is Dominic Reyes 2. Or that Jan Błachowicz. There's two big contenders out there. And then you could even bring the argument, Thiago Santos as well. So there's a lot of contenders at light heavyweight. I wonder if Jones will either have a one fight and go up and fight Stipe, or will he vacate the belt, because he's made it very clear he's not very happy with the money that they're being offered. And if the money's right, he might just jump up, vacate the light heavyweight belt, try and fight Stipe, and then come back down to light heavyweight again.
Do you think maybe he's just dodging the light heavyweight rematches? Because if you think about it, he won decision against, because the last two fights were definitely controversial. Mm-hmm. You know, people were counting him out against Thiago Santos, and people were, I still, like you, man, I've said this many times, but Dominic Reyes, I still believe he won that fight. I still believe he won that fight.
Round three was the one that was a bit here and there.
Yeah.
You know, I think you made the argument that he won round three, so it would make it that Reyes won three rounds to two. Bless me. So I'm thinking that Jones isn't running away. He definitely does know that Reyes is his biggest challenge.
Oh yeah.
And there's also Błachowicz coming. So I really want to see Francis Ngannou versus Stipe again. If I think it's with the beauty of the UFC, sometimes the fans win, and that means, you know, a big money fight. These big money favorites could jump the queue. If Jones does skip the queue, I think the light heavyweight division might have to keep moving while he's gone. He could vacate the belt, fight Stipe. Błachowicz versus Reyes can fight for the vacated light heavyweight belt. Regardless of the situation of what goes on between Jones and Stipe, Jones comes back down to reclaim that belt. There's a lot of really good options. Did you have any idea what you reckon will actually happen? Because there's way too many options for things to be, about.
At the end of the day, you got to ask the question: what do you want to see more of? Do you want to see John Jones's rematch, or do you want to see him go up? That's the big question, because right now I feel like it could go either way. Because the problem is with John Jones, for a guy who is probably one of the greatest of all time, we can establish that. If we look at the top five fighters right now currently, John Jones, definitely one of them. He'll argue for that number one spot for sure. But in terms of pay, you know what I mean? I feel like that's what it is more for him right now. Because if you think about it, John Jones is... A lot of people just don't want to watch him. Not a lot of people, but there are fans out there who just despise him. Because
they still tune in, though.
Yeah?
They still tune in.
But a lot of fans just don't really want anything to do with him because he just... he's at the end of the day, his biggest enemy has always been himself. Mm. He could... The reason why he's the GOAT, but they call him the GOAT right now because he's been almost everybody. He's almost cleared out the division. But the fact that he could be of been so much more if he just wasn't for all those mistakes, you know, for the drugs, the drink driving, the partying, the cocaine, the allegations, the steroids, that he'd been, how many times has he been caught taking them? 2, 3? Well, one of them was the metabolite that was so small.
Yeah, I think he's actually had four.
Four.
I think he's had four. It wasn't four things for the steroids, but it was like, it was four issues with USADA.
There you go. And, you know, so at the end of the day, what do you want to see more, really? Do you want to see him go up? Or do you want to see him stay where he is and have his rematches? But the thing is, when it comes to rematches, John Jones really, really loves to space him out because there's been... There's three times where people have argued where John Jones has lost. The first one was to Alexander Gustafsson. Mm-hmm. That rematch didn't come for years. Daniel Cormier didn't...
It took 5 years to actually materialise.
Exactly. And then there was, Thiago Santos. That was last year.
Mm.
And Dominic Reyes was at the start of this year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Around the start. So there you go. So getting a rematch with John Jones is probably... one of the hardest things ever.
Yeah, but we would know that Jones is notoriously good. He comes so much better in rematches.
Exactly, that's why.
Because we know when he fought Cormier, he beat him in even faster and better. That's such a highlight reel, that head kick knockout. You know, and then just chasing him down after that. Did very well against Alexander Gustafsson. You know, some people made the argument that Gustafsson could have won the Jones fight, right? I think there's been a lot closer fights when it comes with Jones than the Gustafsson one. I think you could make the argument about Reyes.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to Alexander Gustafsson versus Jones 2, Jones dominated.
Oh, he smashed him in the first round.
He dominated him.
Yeah.
So whenever he does get these rematches, he always comes in smarter, faster and better. You know, for him to fight Reyes again or Santos again, a lot of... Jones is a very smart fighter and he's seen a few of your tricks, especially when you fought him. Him and his coach and his people are all going to formulate a plan. It seems like he always comes out a little bit smarter and with more experience and better in the rematches.
He uses the first fight to build his fight IQ.
Mm.
And then his fight IQ is literally so high. It's incomparable.
Yeah.
Because he sort of has to... He's got a style that's so high. All he has to do is just tweak it so it's dominant over his competitor's style.
Well, he's overall very good. His striking is good. He's got good jiu-jitsu. He typically leans on a lot of his wrestling. He's a very high-level wrestler. He was a high-level wrestler before he even touched MMA. So he is a very hard opponent, naturally by being, you know, the light heavyweight GOAT, for any of these fighters. I would love to see... Any of these fights would be brilliant. I would love to see Jones versus Blachowicz. I'd love to see Jones versus... Reyes. I'd love to see Jones versus Stipe, right? There's so many options. You know, there's another option that we didn't even talk about was Stipe versus Ngannou fighting, and whoever wins out of Ngannou fights the winner of Reyes and Jones. You know, that could be a potential thing. I really think they should start building the Jones moving up to a heavyweight, because that would be an enormous fight for a lot of UFC fans, MMA fans in general. You know, you're not an MMA fan if you have never heard of John Jones. You know, there's so many options out there. I don't even, I have no clue. I really feel like Stipe will fight Ngannou first. And I think Jones will either wait or he may fight Reyes again. Mm-hmm. And then move up and fight Miocic.
Awesome. So next up, let's talk about the bantamweight elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Take us away, Jack. Take us away.
Well, I put up a post saying, you know, has the hype train been derailed for the Sugar Show?
Do you think it has?
I don't think it has, because it was... And, you know, a lot of people were actually coming out after Cheeto was celebrating the win. A lot of people were going, how could you celebrate the win? You didn't really win by TKO. You won by... it could have been a doctor stoppage. So do you want to say something?
Yeah, so what you just brought up is this article I'm looking at, I was reading just earlier. So there's a little bit of a conspiracy going regarding that fight. They reckon, well, here's the first thing. The injury that he had specifically, it was the same sort of injury that he did his foot in the previous rounds, in the previous fights. I can't remember which fight it was, but he had that issue with his, I believe it was his right leg. It was his right leg that came down. It was his right. So he had an issue with his right, with his foot, basically. He sort of rolled his ankle. Now, there was two sort of injuries. It was a reoccurring injury from one of his previous fights. Or it was the calf kick that Vera launched at him that sort of might have damaged his nerves.
I really wanted to speak about this because...
Yeah. Go on.
When I was watching the fight, I did notice the kick, and then he found it... Because he wasn't the first time he tripped. He tripped before. And I want to say this because, I did think about this a little bit. I think it's a mixture. It's two things. I think it was the leg kick, the preciseness of it, and he's got... maybe three things. This is the reason why I think he lost, right? It was the leg kick in a very good spot where it makes it very hard for him to stabilize his ankle. Two, it was an old injury. Three, it's Sean O'Malley's footwork style that we find with Dominic Cruz and things like that. You know, it is injury prone, right? And I wanted to say this because Coach Kavanaugh actually weighed in and he said, a leg kick directly onto the right common peroneal nerve, which we know through physiology, results in the inability to dorsiflex your ankle, an increasingly common attack in MMA. So we noticed that the kick lands at 254. You can see that online. And it makes it really, really hard for you to actually stabilize your ankle.
There you go.
Looks like it's then, because he's got a very injury-prone foot, it's affected him.
This is a doctor's input I've got written up here. So there we go. So Sean was definitely hit with a high calf right kick right as he was backing up to the cage shortly after, while the commentators were talking about how short Stipe's legs are. You can see him buckle. The common peroneal nerve causes around the fibula head on the outside of the lower leg, and Vera's kick hit him right on that point. Damage to that nerve and it branches will cause foot to drop. More unopposed ankle rolling inwards and therefore buckling of the foot while trying to walk. We saw that happen, and with the rolling of the foot and hitting the top of the head of the foot on the canvas may have aggravated his old Liz Frank foot injury too. So the argument we got to say is, was this a planned attack or was this lucky? Was this a fight IQ of Cheeto basically knowing that he'd already injured his foot so he know where to strike, or do you reckon it was just a regular calf kick that just gone wrong?
Well, Sean O'Malley had an old Liz Frank injury to his foot, right? And I feel is that Cheeto didn't intentionally do it to stop the fight that way. However, it is a really good kick in his arsenal because they both come out of the team Oyama, and his one of his buddies Alex Perez actually stopped the fight a few months ago through the exact same kind of kicks. I think because Sean O'Malley's movement is very dynamic, just like, you know, Connors and Dominic Cruz, which they use to kind of freeze their opponent and hit from angles and really get a lot of really good shots in and with very good timing. I think he was using that more to affect his movement and his footwork. It just hit its mark, and perhaps Sean just really hasn't rehabbed that foot well enough. And, you know, these things happen. And I think he will be back. I don't think the hype train is derailed. I think he's got very good striking, good footwork, good timing in that. He's got a bit of power for being such a skinny guy.
Yeah, do you know what I think?
What's that?
I think maybe he could come back, right? Go up a division.
He looks very skinny.
He is very skinny, and he's young too. He puts on a little bit more size. I reckon he'll be really good in the lightweight the featherweight division.
Bantamweight seems a bit too...
Yeah, for a tall guy such as himself. And here's the other thing. Did you see the post that he put up just recently on Instagram? He captioned it humbled.
Oh, yeah.
And it's him just playing video games and smoking weed with a couple of models. I'm guessing one of them is his girlfriend.
No, I don't think it is. He's got a wife.
He's got a wife.
That's what it said on the UFC Embedded. But he said on the Food Truck Diaries with Brendan Schaub, he said, actually, I've got an open relationship with my girlfriend. And he was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I think that's weird as fuck. But, you know, that's just so fucking strange to have an open relationship with your wife. But... Well, your girlfriend in general, but
yeah. Here's the thing, man. Marlon Vera, he's got a bit of hype now.
He got on the cage and he said it's the Cheeto show.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Brunson right before the fight says do not count Cheeto out. He was right. We a lot of people did count him out, and now those people are basically eating their words.
Well, arguably he should have won his last fight. I think it was Yudong Song. I think he fought, and I think he should have beat Yudong Song. I don't think he won. I don't think he actually won. I think Vera did enough to win. I think a lot of people were saying, you know, the rankings can be a little bit bullshit in the UFC because, you know, they don't always show how good a fighter is. And a lot of people were saying, you know, don't actually sleep on Vera. We said that before. I said, I actually said, I'm not hating on Sean O'Malley. I think you think he's fine, but like. And I really do like his style, and he walks and talks, and he does very well. I just thought it was strange that we have Stipe Miocic for Daniel Cormier 3, the biggest heavyweight trilogy, one who's going to be the greatest MMA in the heavyweight division, and then the co-main is Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera. Sean hasn't fought anyone in the top 15.
Yeah,
I found that strange.
It's just it shows that the fans love him because here's what we talked about in the last podcast. We don't want this Sean O'Malley guy to be pushed too soon.
We did say that, and yeah. It seems like he was pushed too soon.
Do you feel like that? I don't think maybe he was pushed too soon. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Because the definition of me maybe pushing him too soon was him giving the title shot too early. You know what I mean? Like Darren Till. I do feel like he was pushed a little bit because he had a lot of hype around him because he was very popular with the young generation as well because he's a Twitch streamer.
He's a stoner.
So
he's a funny dude.
So really, he was pushed, but not pushed too much. But I'd rather happen what happened to him now than him fighting for the bantamweight title and getting absolutely embarrassed. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Like because he is nowhere near like the Aljamain Sterling, Piotr Jan
the Henry Cejudo, the TJ Dillashaw.
He's not there yet. He's got maybe a couple more years. I reckon, and then he would, but put him on the main card, yes.
He's a young guy.
Yeah.
He's a young guy.
Yeah, so is Marlon Vera. Marlon Vera is only 27 too. So, yes, put him on the main card, but no, don't put him on the main event. Put him the co-main event. I understand your argument.
Yeah.
So, that's definitely something.
I just want to speak about this, though. Like, before, you know, Cody Garbrandt went and, you know, he was having a little bit of beef with Sean, and I think he was just leaning into him a little bit. Even a little bit after the fight, but actually on that post that you were talking about where he's, you know, he's just gaming, smoking and resting up, Cody went and said, Sean went and said, oh, I'm humbled, and Cody, you know, he's the top comment and he said, happens to us all at some point. You know, it shows that, Cody's actually going, you know, it's all right. And I think that was a big man thing to actually say. Especially, I'm excited for his next fights as well. But the funniest thing was Theo Vaughn, and he said, heal up. And he also did another comment, he said, still thought you won. Theo Vaughn said, still thought you won. And he's a funny dude.
Not even that, but like when it came to the Marlon Vera, basically, he's got the last laugh now. Yeah. Because he was calling out Sean O'Malley's corner. He was basically saying in the... what is it? He was basically saying in the post-fight conference, oh, this is his quote, that guy was talking shit while we were getting ready to walk to the cage. He was yelling, he's slow. It's like, dude, it's a fucking fight. If you want to get in my head, you've got to try harder than that. So I was just like, the only way to pay is fucking your kid up. There you go. Marlon Vera, he's got a bit of hype now. He said, I believe I'm a solid top 10. I've been making damage in the division. What happened in the last fight got me pretty upset, got me pretty angry, and actually made me do what I did tonight. I wasn't happy. I was pushing myself a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hard on me. I didn't give myself vacation. Because if you think about it, before his last loss, he was on a free fight winning streak.
Mm.
So now he gets one loss, works even harder, wins again. So I want to see where Marlon Vera goes. Also, here's what could happen. Marlon Vera climbs up the division a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then Sean O'Malley comes back, wins one, fights Marlon Vera again for the second time. Mm-hmm. Then if he wins, because Marlon Vera will be higher, Sean O'Malley, I reckon one more fight after that, then title shot.
Right.
That's my take.
But sweet.
I just want to see where Sean O'Malley goes from here.
Yeah, I think it just depends how long, because you've got to take it off in a stretcher, so it depends how long that foot injury takes. And I hope he doesn't rush that either, because, you know, foot and leg injuries are no joke.
Yeah.
Especially
your ankle, because there's so many, like, tendons and ligaments.
Because he's got quite dynamic, you know. He's always wearing those little ankle sleeves as well. Okay, so another big fight was JDS, Junior Dos Santos, versus, I can't pronounce his name, Yuzino Rosenstrike. So when we were watching it, I thought JDS was looking, he looked the best shape he's ever been. The man looked, you know, shredded, and JDS is a very, he's definitely in the, you know, those top 10 heavyweights for sure.
That sweet mustache.
I know, he looks good with that mustache.
I was saying when he came out, I was like, mate, he looks like a hitman from Knuckles.
Exactly. But JDS, I thought he won round one. And then, you know, 10-9 round. Then Rosenstrike comes out, clips him. You know, he catches him. JDS tries to recover. He's on the back foot. Rosenstrike just starts swinging. And some of those punches really did hit the mark. And he stopped it, you know, he stopped it quickly. He stopped it at round two. 3:47. That was a really good fight to see. I didn't expect it to finish so early on. I thought maybe like a third or fourth round. Just like a third round or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
That was a really good fight to see.
Yeah, Rosenstrike, he's a very, very humble dude as well.
Mm.
He literally, after he knocked out JDS, went and sat down next to him in the cage and put his arms over him And then they asked him in the press conference, what did you say, man? He said to him, I just wanted to go up to tell him and say I loved him and that he's one of my heroes. Mm-hmm. And then it was an honor to fight him. And he says he wasn't very comfortable with the knockout, but at the end of the day, business is business.
It was nice to see that respect between fighters, you know.
It's good. It's, you know, because at the end of the day, they love to fight, but at the end of the day, like, to be knocking out your hero,
they don't wish harm on icons, and idols that they like hold a lot of value. I didn't expect Rosenstrike to be so trigger happy, because he was still trigger happy in the first round.
Yeah.
I expected him to be a lot more reserved, because it wasn't that long ago that he got thrashed in the first 10 seconds of the round against Ngannou. And
When we were
watching at the pub, there were actually guys behind us saying, you know, when he gets hit by JDS, I wonder if he sees the ghost of Ngannou behind him and it shits him, like makes him shit himself. But Rosenstrike, he came out like it. That event never happened.
Yeah.
Because that kind of knockout and that kind of devastating fashion, that's got to really affect your mind, especially fighting wise. Because when we know himself in Ngannou, you know, when he lost to Stipe, he was not like that about Derek Lewis. You know, we were speaking about that early. They didn't really engage. Rosenstrike, he just went after it. I thought he even looked in better shape.
Oh, yeah. Kamaru Usman says it best. He says, every time you fight, you lose a little piece of yourself. Mm. And when you lose an even bigger piece of yourself.
Yeah.
So that's why. And especially from someone like Francis Ngannou, who knocked him out, and it was a pretty gruesome knockout.
He was literally sitting down,
and then Ngannou smacked him with that massive right while he was already knocked out.
His chin was already in his chest, yeah, just down like that, and he was already out.
And it's just shot, and so that would obviously done some permanent damage to him. But to come back like that and be so relaxed against probably one of the best heavyweights again, and how chilled he was, just shows that he can come back from a big loss. And I reckon if Stipe does not fight Ngannou somewhere down the track, Rozenstruik versus Ngannou too, maybe.
That would be really good to see, because to be honest, we didn't really get to see them trade a whole lot. You know, we only got to see, you know, Ngannou throw a few punches, Rozenstruik do a couple leg kicks, and then Ngannou just flicks the switch, he just runs at this guy. And Ngannou's got really a lot of technique, but it looked like he just abandoned and he was just like, I'm gonna just smash you. You know, I'm gonna smash this guy, and he just went bang.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only loss on Rozenstruik's record. He's 11-1.
Yeah.
And that one is from Ngannou. Yeah. Which your respective is, you know, he's number two in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, and Junior Dos Santos, man, he's been fighting in the UFC for 12 years.
A long time.
12 years. His first win at heavyweight was in 2008 against Fabricio Werdum. He's beaten Marco Krokop. He's beaten Stefan Struve, who Miocic basically lost to. He's beaten Roy Nelson. He's beaten Gabriel Gonzaga. Some other names on there. So he was on a pretty good winning streak. You know, and then finally he beat Frank Mir as well, and then his loss was, so from 2008 to 2012, he was undefeated until he lost to Cain Velasquez, and that was when he lost his title.
Yeah.
And that was when Cain Velasquez became champion, and then he lost to him again, and then he came back in 2013 and beat Mark Hunt. So yeah, and then he beat Junior Dos Santos, beat Stipe Miocic again. So he beat for the first time, sorry, and that I believe was when he got his heavyweight title back. And then he lost to Alistair Overeem, and then after losing to Alistair Overeem, he beat Ben Rothwell, and then since then he lost to Stipe Miocic, who had the title at the time.
Yeah,
there you go.
So I wanted to move on to the next fight. See, I was going for Herbert Burns against Danny Pineda, just because Herbert Burns had a very, very devastating knockout with a very powerful left knee. It was probably one of the best knockouts of 2020, I'll be honest. And there's been quite a bit. There's been quite a lot of really good knockouts, but Herbert, just because he's the brother of Gilbert Burns, who is
number one contender
for the welterweight division, and his Brazilian jiu-jitsu is very, very good. And we saw him try to use that against Pineda, but Burns got smashed in the first round early on before he could really kind of, you know, Herbert Burns actually got a really nice knee while the guy was coming in. It was a good intercept. But Pineda just went, when he got hit, he just kept forward with that momentum, hit Burns very, very hard with the right overhand. You know, it showed the amount of damage and how hurt it made Burns, because, you know, Burns had to kind of pull guard and see if he could work and try and find a submission from there, see if he could try and take his back, but it just wasn't working for him in the end. And then By the end of round one, he was not looking good. He really wasn't looking good. And when round two came along, Pineda just pulled it on him, and they had to stop the fight early.
Yeah, but he took a lot of shots to the face.
His face did not look good.
No.
His face didn't look good at all.
It's just one of those moments where because we were rooting for Herbert. We wanted him to win, but it's just a moment where you're like, stop it, you know what I mean? Like, you got to admit, it's just one of those moments where you just got to admit defeat. But Herbert Burns, I mean, again, he's young. He's only fought in the UFC 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still got a long way to go. I think he's very young too.
He had some issues with the UFC, and that's why he hasn't fought that many times.
What was the issues?
I think it was a suspension or something like that. I can't remember actually. While you look that up, though, I just want to say that when Panetta got him in that mounted crucifix position and he was just raining ground and pound on his face, we were there just going, stop the fight. He's not getting out.
Yeah.
When people get that mounted crucifix, was it John Jones that got the same position on Alexander Gustafsson, the mounted crucifix, I think?
I thought he won by rear naked choke.
I thought he was using... I thought in his the second fight... he used that mountain crucifix a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be a really good position because you're able to put your shin bone on their arm and they can't move, they can't turn without, you know, they can turn their hips and they can try and worm their way out, but you've still pinned one of their limbs to the ground as their arm. So that mobilizes their shoulder joint. They can't do anything. You know, they can't turn. It's a really good position. I think Panetta just used it. You know, I think a lot of people were expecting Herbert Burns, like just like us. I was expecting Herbert Burns to submit him or something like that. But, you know, Panetta did it very, very well. And Panetta's got some sick tattoos, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I noticed that Hanya mask that he's got. Do you know what a Hanya mask is?
Yeah, it's one of those masks that samurais wear when they go to fight.
No, the Hanya mask is a female demon.
Really?
It's a female demon mask.
Didn't samurai wear those sort of masks? I swear they did.
It wasn't a Hanya mask. It wasn't that's just like a demon mask or something.
Okay.
But the Hanya mask he on has his on back. His back
yeah.
is a...
That was terrifying.
It's called a female demon mask.
How do you spell that?
H-A-N-N-Y-A. Hanya mask. It's a very popular tattoo, but a lot of people are just getting on their legs, on their forearms. He got it all across his entire back. It looks sick. He's got some cool tattoos.
Okay, let me drop some knowledge on you. The Hanya mask is used in many, many Noa or Kyojin Japanese plays as well as a Shinto ritual Kagura dances. The Hanya mask portrays the souls of women who have become demons due to obsession or jealousy.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing to get tattooed on your back.
Very interesting. And a lot of people get the Hanya mask because it just looks cool.
Right? I want to ask him, was there a reason why you chose that? That sounds like something...
Oh, yeah. I'd love to ask Panetta, why do you have that kind of demon mask that symbolizes jealousy and oppression?
Yeah. I mean, especially towards women. Yeah. That's the other thing I thought.
Very strange. But I know that for the bantamweight fight on this main card, you were going for John Dodson because he's been around for a long time. I think he was 35 or something like that. And I said, nah, do not sleep on Merab.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Merab fight this year. He's a real contender. He's only number 15 in the bantamweight division. I feel like he's easily top 10. I really do. I think, you know, he came in ripped, shredded. He is huge for bantamweight. I really think he could be a featherweight. He's got a similar physique to, you know, like Chad Mendes and that. But he has cardio for days. The pace that he had on him, he didn't stop. You know, and John Dodson, it seemed like he was misfiring. It seemed...
He wasn't getting many shots.
Something felt off. With John Dodson. I'm not too sure what.
Well, one thing I love about the way he fights is that he uses his spinning back fist.
Mm.
And he loves to grab. He loves to do takedowns. I think he did like, nine takedowns.
He has the highest UFC takedowns in UFC history.
Yeah. So him and Khabib have very similar fighting styles. You know, he loves to come out wearing that, you know, the fluffy hat that Khabib always likes to wear.
Fluffy hat.
You know what I'm talking about.
So it's like a head garment for their where they're from, but perhaps not from Dagestan, he's from Georgia.
Yeah.
So Georgian fighter.
So similar behind that, the story is, now, I think if I remember, it's called a kipaka or something like that. It's got a special name to it, and the reason why they wear it is, it's also got to do with Khabib's name, the reason why they wear it is because it's a tribute to his homeland fighters, right?
Mm.
And there's a tradition in this culture that they have where in order to become a ritual that a boy must go to from boy to man,
yeah,
he has to basically grow up with an eagle, like, and treat it like it's his pet. They have to catch the eagle.
Right.
They have to train that eagle to fight, and they love it like it's their own child. Uh-huh. And that was the head, that was the head attire that they would wear, and it was a symbol, as it was something that they would earn once they become a warrior with their eagle. So that's one of the reasons why. It's like a sign of honor. It's like a badge of honor for their homeland. And I believe the reason
when they become a man.
Yes, correct.
Right.
And they cannot gain one of those until they've gone through that ritual. And the different colors symbolize their tribe.
Yeah,
so the white one was,
they come from. Yes. So white is from Dagestan, where he comes in Dagestan, and the black one is where Mab comes from.
Yeah, so that's the reason behind it.
It's very interesting to see this, see that sort of thing. It's cool to see that they still have that form of...
tradition.
Tradition, yeah. Yeah. It's really cool that they still hold on to that. So what it's called is a papa.
That's
papa
it.
Papa cat.
Yeah.
Which is an item of clothing that is native to his homeland. So, oh no, it's pronounced papaha.
Yeah, it's very hard to pronounce, yeah.
It's a piece of headwear which is often worn by Avarian shepherds to signal strength and self-sufficiency. Obviously, and it represents where he's from, my small hometown in Dagestan. So it's not just Dagestan, it's his town in Dagestan.
Yeah.
So there must be different colors to symbolize where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool to see.
Yeah.
But Murab, moving back to him, like, you know, he did very well to get that decision. I believe he won every round. 3-0, I think he won. I think he won every round. I think it was 30-27 in my book. I feel like he did really, really well. John Dodson is no slouch as well. You know, he's been a professional MMA fighter since 2004. You know, he's an excellent fighter. Everything seemed off. He was misfiring. Mm. I really feel like Murab's definitely a good contender in the top 10.
Oh, for sure. Because we said literally at the end of the fight, mate, that dude doesn't even look tired. He can go 5 rounds for sure.
I don't think he was even breathing heavy. And he mixed does what Khabib does and mixes the striking and the wrestling well.
Yeah.
You know, when the striking's not working, he does the wrestling. When he comes up from the wrestling, you know, he was very good at locking onto him and holding him there and not letting go. The one thing I could say, even though John Dodson was misfiring a bit, his punches weren't looking, he wasn't looking the same John Dodson that we usually see when you see, you know, these big KO highlight reels. What he did do really well, takedown defense.
Yes, he does a very good
very,
takedown.
Very, very well. I think it was 6 or 8 takedowns, or maybe 10 that he'd squashed pretty much. I think he did very, very well. I think that was the main thing that we were commenting on. Very good takedown defense by John Dodson.
Yeah, he's a veteran. He's 37. You know, he's been fighting for quite
35.
He's been fighting for quite some time. He's got in the top 5 fastest knockouts. He's definitely one of the top 5. His record knockout is 8 seconds.
Mm. He came out of the Ultimate Fighter as well.
Oh, there you go.
I remember saying, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. That's what he said. So if you ain't cheating, you're not trying.
Yeah.
And that was when he was trying to get information from the other camps and things like that. Fair play to him, though. You know, he did very good takedown defense. It just seemed like it wasn't his night. He was a bit off.
Correct. You know? Correct.
That was a really good day for us. But, you know, it was topped off because we also got to do our first ever podcast collaboration, and that was with the For a Laugh podcast, which was with Daniel and Connor.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Well, hopefully it's dropping soon because I want to rewatch it because it went for 2 hours. It was a 2-hour long podcast, and I don't think there was any fat in that podcast to trim.
I was actually quite surprised. They had that little time. Their setup is crazy.
The setup is very good.
Very, very good. Like, they've got all their cameras, all their mics, all their laptops. Everything's all nailed down.
They've got lighting, they've got everything.
They had that thing called a ninja that was out in front, and you could look at the ninja and it could see where what the cameras were aiming.
It's just a HDMI monitor that you can plug through. So with a camera, a lot of the time why they don't last that well, because the battery goes through or it overheats, is, you know, when you're recording, your monitor is constantly on that entire time when it doesn't need to. Rye really doesn't need to. However, you know, in order to save battery life and to lose a bit of heat because it doesn't have to work as hard to save the components from heating up, what they do is they'll put a HDMI cable in and they'll set up a monitor. And that's really cool because if you don't have a flip screen, you can sit at the table and record a podcast and you can check the shot. And it's great for them because they have, you know, we usually have two camera angles while they have three, and they can interchange them through a little keyboard that they have and pressing the buttons. Also, they have the cool sounds on the mixer that they have.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Pro. We're looking into purchasing that for our podcast. That would be very, very cool for us to have.
Just the conversation with them in general was really good.
I mean, felt like we vibed really well.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, it was just at a time, like, it was just us being us, really. We got to talk about
some cool shit. We hardly even talked about MMA in general.
No, really. We didn't. We just talked stories. Like, we talked about comedy, we talked about stripping, we talked about martial arts, we talked about how we even got, like, even
we went into a little bit of mental health.
Yeah, and like it got deep. Well. It was a really deep conversation. I actually felt, like, I remember leaving their house and, like, I want to do that again.
As soon as we came out, I said, we should totally do that again. I'm so keen for them to come on our podcast. We just need to upgrade our setup, yeah, which we're going to do. Our audio is going to get better. Our lighting is going to get better. Once you sort out the audio, we'll have guests and things like that on.
Yeah,
I'd love to do that with them. And because we were their first, you know, collaboration, mm-hmm, outside of, you know, their single guests, we should do the exact same. I'd love to have them on our podcast.
Yeah. Well, we were saying this a lot in the car at home. We've been doing this for 6 weeks, just over 6 weeks now. After leaving their house, we're already pretty motivated and pretty committed to this.
Yeah, but, of course.
But after leaving the house, I thought to myself, I want to be twice as much as committed because they set a really good standard for how podcasts can, or how our podcast can look.
Yeah, yeah.
They set because they the way they have everything set up, the way they got everything now down, the cameras, the backgrounds, the desks that they had in front of them, the mixer, the sounds. It was.
We were very consistent with getting it done and recording and getting it out there really quickly. I feel like we can learn something from them and improve the visual side as well as the audio side, because I feel like they nailed a lot of things. They nailed, you know, the lighting, they nailed the camera angles, they nailed the, you know, the sounds. Everything I felt was pretty good. And even though we went for 2 hours, which is quite a long form podcast, I know there are ones out there that Joe Rogan does that are, you know, go for 3 or 4 hour podcasts. But 2 hours went by so fast. I felt like it was 30 minutes, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there was a couple of bathroom breaks from everyone in between. I held it in. I had to cross-leg it at the end, like, fuck, I ain't breaking now.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I was having so much fun. I was really enjoying that conversation.
I made the mistake of chewing gum beforehand, and I would put it in the inside of my mouth because I was like, I don't want the mic to pick it up. But then it went all gross and congealed, and it was really nasty. So I was like, while I was talking, I was like touching my pockets. So I was like, fuck, I've got nothing. I thought maybe I can pull a receipt out of my wallet and spit it in there. I couldn't find anything. So I was like, fuck it, you can be in my gut for 7 years. And I just went, I'm pretty sure that they debunked that. I don't think gum stays in your gut for 7 years, but I was committed to it. But afterwards, like, I think it got to about an hour and a half, and I was like, I really got to piss now. Because you gave me water. We never really drink on the podcast. Actually, that's a good point. They were brought up that
why we don't really drink.
And we've talked about it so many times. Let's not speak about why we don't drink. But I think I'll have a beer next time on the podcast. I think you should too.
Yeah.
Out of respect, you should have a beer on the podcast.
I'll have a whiskey on that podcast. You know what I mean? I've still got that Jameson. I'll bring some of that Jameson. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But like I said to them, I need a read. If I'm going to drink, it's got to be for a good reason. To have a podcast with them, okay. Now that's a good enough reason for me.
I think coming back and doing a collab 2.0 would be a good reason to have a whiskey and a drink in that. I think that would be a good thing to have.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, they're starting, they've been doing it for a long time, but when they start the social media, we'll be able to plug it.
We got to ask that. That was a big shock to us why they do not have any social media whatsoever.
Seems like they were very busy with full-time work and full-time jobs and having that sort of thing. I feel like they could have grown a lot quicker. But to be honest, you know, if they start it now, they start it now. I feel like they're at a better point. They were even saying they're at a better point now where they would like to do the social media. I feel like they're going to grow very quickly. And we're stoked for them because it's always cool to plug other people that we know as well as fellow Australian podcasts. So, you know, I honestly, I we walked out and I think we were both so really happy that we did it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just I had an idea in my mind how it was going to go. It absolutely beyond exceeding all expectations.
Yeah, I wasn't going in with the...
There was a lot of laughs in that podcast.
It was, and it was really fun. It was a really fun podcast, and I think there was a lot of things we learned from there. It was good for someone that had been, you know, they'd been podcasting for a longer period of time.
We'd how long? Do it.
4 years?
4 years,
2016,
yeah.
I think.
They said they'd done a few seasons.
I think they're on season 4, or that podcast was the start of season 5. So it was really good to enjoy a different kind of process because we didn't really have to worry about anything and they were kind of talking to us and asking us questions. And it was nice to sit back. It was different. It was a different kind of thing where, you know, we could sit back and actually think about our responses and talk to them. And they gave us some unique questions that I don't think we would have asked in our own podcast.
Yeah, they were pretty good at that. They had some questions that really had me thinking for a moment. And there were some times where we were just talking. It was literally a very good state of flow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was very informative.
Well, you don't get to a two-hour podcast without having good flow.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the reason why it was so good is we vibed with them very well.
Yeah.
I think if it was other people, it could have gone a different way. I think we vibed very well.
And they're very open. That's the one thing I liked about them. Yeah. They were very, very open about their insecurities, and we were kind of trying to be open ourselves.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's just the way that they accepted it. You know what I mean? It was really good. It was a good space. And I mean, we wish the best for them. We hope that they grow from this, you know?
Yeah, so hopefully when it's up soon, because we filmed it yesterday, I don't know if it's on any audio platforms. It's most likely not on YouTube yet, but when it is and this one's up, it's probably going to be up. So we'll have everything in the description. So if you want to check it out, please do check it out. They've got a great channel. They've got a lot of episodes that you can go back and rewatch. Please go support them because it was really nice of them inviting us on. And being our first podcast collaboration, you couldn't have set the bar any higher because their setup was very good. And then, you know, they were very welcome to have us on. It was a really good experience, I think.
Well, good. Yeah. Do you want to leave it up there?
I think just leave it there. But I just want to quickly mention some other stuff. So next week, we've got Frankie Edgar versus Pedro Munoz, as well as OSP versus Alonso Menifield. So I know we don't have a huge amount of time, but I do want to talk about the Frankie Edgar versus Pedro Munoz. Frankie's been around for a long period of time. I believe he was the UFC lightweight champion at one point. Now, he's against Pedro Munoz. Pedro Munoz actually beat Cody Garbrandt by TKO. So Pedro Munoz fought Cody. Cody actually rocked him. However, you know, that old style of Cody, he would get into a little bit of a scrap. And even though he dropped Pedro Munoz and he saw red, he started going and attacking at the head. Pedro just hit the mark, you know, and actually he was able to get the knockout. So this is really good to see against Frankie Edgar. I would like to think that this is probably Frankie's last fight. And it's sad to see because we saw DC retire yesterday. And now, win or lose, Frankie could retire as well. You know, this is... There was a point in time where Frankie was on the top of the world and he was one of these challengers with Chad Mendes who were going to fight Cody, was going to fight Conor McGregor at one point at featherweight. So it's sad that some of these fighters we've known for a long time are starting to retire. It's a bit sad, isn't it? You know, even seeing like GSP retire twice, Michael Bisping retiring. It's these fighters have been around for a long time. We've watched them for a long period of time. It's just, it's different. It definitely, it's a weird feeling. Did you have a pick for who was going to win this?
I just want Frankie Yen to win on a high. You know what I mean?
I do too.
Yeah, that's all. But this Perez guy, he's no joke.
Yeah.
He's no joke.
Yeah, Pedro is, he's definitely got a high striking ability to be able to take out Cody. You know, that's going to be such a good fight. I think that's next Sunday, so we'll definitely be watching that fight. There was one question I want to leave with you for the end of the podcast, though. Michael Chandler actually did an interview, and I had a look at it today, and he said, because he's now a free agent after knocking out Ben Henderson in, you know, devastating fashion, Bellator, he's now a free agent. And what he's looking for is he's looking to go over to the UFC. And he says, if I go to the UFC, I'm not fighting any top 25. I'm not fighting any in the top 20, top 15, top 10. I'm fighting people in the top five. I want a Dustin Poirier. I want a Conor McGregor. I want a Khabib. He wants a Tony Ferguson. I think him versus Tony would be a great fight. Him versus Conor. I can see Conor biting because, you know, there's probably not a whole lot of things that motivate him, but to come in and take out Michael Chandler would be a big goal for him. It's not an easy move.
No.
Michael Chandler's a beast. An absolute gun, you know. Fought through Bellator, and I feel like if he comes to the UFC, he's already the top five. And I think the UFC will agree. I think they will. They'll give them their best, because when Ben Askren came from ONE FC, he was the best like welterweight champion in the ONE FC. So when he came over to the UFC, talking a big game, saying he wanted the best, they threw him some real dogs, some real wolves out there. Threw him Robbie Lawler, threw him Jorge Masvidal, they threw him Damian Maia. Three absolute beasts, right? And it didn't go well. I feel like the UFC will give him a top five because they want to crush him.
Yeah.
I really think they want to crush Michael Chandler to show that they're the best.
Yeah, but Michael Chandler is no joke. He's not the one who's going to go down easily. So I honestly believe that if he were to go to UFC, fight the top five, he would be like a legit threat, and he could.
He's scary.
I reckon the UFC would be surprised.
Contender.
I reckon the UFC would be surprised.
I think that if there's a move that the UFC should make, it is to sign Michael Chandler. But he's so well rounded. He's an absolute beast. The way he took out Ben Henderson was crazy as well. So I want the UFC to sign Michael Chandler, because I feel like Michael Chandler would have very competitive fights with the top five and top 10 in the UFC. Very much, because he's, you know, I think it would be a very, very interesting matchup for someone like Tony Ferguson, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Justin Gaethje. You know, I think it would be a really, really good fight. Is there anything else you want to talk about? I feel that was probably a good.
I think that's a good chunk for today's episode. All I can say is, guys, keep liking, keep subscribing. We're on our way. You know, we're doing pretty well. We're trying to get to our goal. Our next goal was trying to get to at least 200 downloads on.
200 downloads. We're not too far off. And then our big goal that we were talking about is we want to get 20 podcasts out by the end of the year.
We can definitely do that.
This is our 12th. This will be MMA Hour 8. So we're not far off since we've done it for six weeks.
So basically we average 2 a week now. Oh, shit. We average 2 a week.
What do you mean?
2 podcasts a week. We average now.
We average about 2 a week.
Yeah, so.
So considering we filmed a podcast yesterday for 2 hours.
And then we did one today straight away.
We did one today. So we're trying to stay as consistent as we can. And just thank you for all the bit. We're very grateful for any bit of success and support. So Yeah, thank you very much for listening. And I hope you enjoy the MMA hours and you maybe stay for the non-MMA hours where we talk everyday shit.
Everyday shit.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Take care, guys. All the best. Bye. Stay safe.